The third case on the en banc calendar today is Wilbur Ernesto Martinez Guzman versus the Second Judicial District Court and the State of Nevada Real Party in Interest, case number 81842. Counsel, are you ready to proceed? Mr. Petty, could you repeat? I didn't hear you and I want to make sure you're not muted.
I am not muted. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. It's a bit light, so you may have to speak up.
I was given that instruction and I'll try to speak louder.
Okay. Ms. Kate?
I don't want to yell at the court.
Well, that's okay. Feel free. We'll hear you that way. Ms. Kate, good afternoon. I guess you're ready as well. Let's proceed, Mr. Petty.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor. My name is good afternoon, Chief Justice Hardenstein, Justice Counsel, and may it please the court. My name is John Petty, and I represent the petitioner, Wilbur Ernesto Martinez Guzman. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, please. So, once again, where we are, is on the heels of this court's opinion, Martinez Guzman, a petition that was filed a little over a year ago and decided just over a year ago. That opinion did two things. First, drawing from the rule announced in McNamara of the state, that Nevada courts obtain territorial jurisdiction over interstate criminal offenses where there is insufficient connection between the offense in Nevada, this court concluded that the territorial jurisdiction in the case involving inter-county offenses depends on the existence of necessary connections as identified in Nevada's venue statutes between the criminal offense and the district court that seeks to hear the case.
Mr. Petty, I'm going to have to interrupt you a moment and hold the clock, if you would, Ms. Clerk. Mr. Rickman, the reception here still isn't very good. Is there anything we can do to improve on that? It's very difficult to hear what Mr. Petty is saying, at least for me and perhaps others.
Yes, I instructed him to sit as close as he can to his mic earlier, and I can't turn him up anymore. Okay. I can turn you three up a little bit, but I still feel it's going to be...
Yeah, it's coming across, Mr. Petty, muffly, so your words are getting garbled and it's difficult to hear.
I'm trying to...
That was better, by the way.
That was much better.
Just that comment was an improvement.
All right, well, I went to settings. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yeah.
That's correct. Yes, much, much, much better.
All right. That is the extent of my technical knowledge. I hope that it helps.
Well, I'd say it's worked.
All right. Let me just recap this real quick then. I reserved 4 minutes, and what I wanted to point out is that we start this case from the standpoint of the first Guzman case, which was decided about a little over a year ago, and that case had done two important things. The first thing that it did was that it drew upon the rule that had been announced in McNamara that for interstate territorial jurisdiction to exist, there had to be sufficient connections between the crime and the state of Nevada. And making a comparison, this court said that for territorial jurisdiction in a case involving inter-county offenses, it depended on the existence of necessary connections as identified in Nevada venue statutes between the criminal offense and the court that elects to hear the case. That was the first crucial thing. The second thing that the court did was it remanded the matter back to the district court for the purpose of determining, based on the evidence presented to the Washoe County grand jury, so we're talking about a factually closed universe, whether or not necessary connections exist between Douglas County offenses and the Second Judicial District for purposes of establishing venue. We are here this afternoon because on remand, the court didn't follow the mandate of the court. It didn't follow the mandate of the court
in the first instance, because rather than applying just venue statutes, it also elected to apply two statutes that have nothing to do with venue. The first was NRS 171.020, which is the jurisdiction statute that was interpreted by McNamara. And the second was NRS 173.115, which is the joinder statute in Nevada. We think that that error is clear. This court mandated the district court to look at the grand jury transcript through the prism of venue statutes. It elected to go outside that mandate, so that constitutes error. We also think error exists because of its application of two venue statutes that we believe, and I think everybody agrees, are applicable. The first is NRS 171.030, and that statute, like similar statutes in other states, was enacted to close a loophole in the common law that had often made it difficult to prosecute a crime that had begun in one county, but it ended in another. NRS 171.030 has two clauses. The first places venue in any county where a public offense is committed in part in one county and in part in another. This language requires a continuing offense, and there is no continuing offense existing in this particular case. I'll give you an example. If McNamara had been an inter-county offense that started in Clark County, the kidnapping started in Clark County and came up into Washoe County or Douglas County, then either Douglas County, Washoe County, or Clark County would have venue for that public offense of kidnapping. But there is no such situation going on here. There is no continuing offense, so that's part of the statute doesn't apply. You have to look to the second clause. I'll say this. Not even the district court believed that a continuing offense existed. And we know that because when it wrongly relied upon the joinder statute, it relied upon that part of the joinder statute that speaks to common scheme or plan. It did not use that part of the statute that says that joinder is possible based on the same act or transaction. So we can conclude that the district court did not see a continuing offense, but we have to look at the second aspect of the 171.030. That second clause places venue in either county where the acts or effects thereof constituting or requisite to the consummation occur in two or more counties. Other courts in other jurisdictions have concluded that not every act or occurrence or effect in some way connected with the commission of a crime is jurisdictionally significant. And I think that term, jurisdictionally significant, should resonate with the rest of this presentation, because I think it can be read in conjunction with this court's mandate that there must be necessary connections. There must be necessary connections that are jurisdictionally significant. For example, and these are examples that are drawn in part from the California Supreme Court case People v. Thomas, you might have in one county a drug lab or a counterfeit ring that is supplying drugs into another county or supplying money to a person in another county. That would be a clear, directed effect occurring from one county into another that would give rise for venue. We don't have anything like that here, nor do we have anything of a more personal nature. Mr. Guzman simply was not engaged in acts in Washoe County that were directed to have an effect or to reach the consummation of a criminal offense in Douglas County. I know that Ms. Cave will disagree with me here. What I believe the state's position is, well, the jurisdictionally significant act in Washoe County occurred when Mr. Guzman found the handgun on the Davids property. And because this court directed the district court to look to the grand jury testimony, I can tell you there are two places in the grand jury testimony where this act or this gun is mentioned. The first is found at pages 91 through 92 of petitioner's supplemental appendix, which is the grand jury transcript, that involves Mr. Val Diaz, who was a friend of the Davids, who testified at the grand jury that Mr. David, after the second visit on January the 4th, had found it quite strange that some property left after the second burglary had more value than the property actually taken. And in fact, some of the property that was taken had no value. In that, at that time, Mr. Diaz said Mr. Davis also mentioned that although he was not sure, he thought a handgun had possibly been taken. That is the extent of that comment on the group. The second instance is the detective Stephanie Brady, when she came back to the grand jury after initially testifying, this time to testify about her interrogation or interview of Mr. Guzman. And in that particular conversation, at page 257 of the grand jury transcript in the appendix, she says that Mr. Guzman admitted to taking a handgun that was in a box or a container in a trailer on the property of Mr. David. And if you go and read the actual transcript of the interview, and this is found in volume one of the Real Parties appendix at page 274, he uses the word case. He found the gun inside a case. There is absolutely nothing in the references that I make suggesting that Mr. Guzman formed the specific intent or any intent to commit a crime in Douglas County while in Washoe County. Rather, it looks like he took property indiscriminately while on the Davis property in Washoe County on the 3rd and the 4th of July. And then he went back to Carson City. It was approximately a week, five to 8 days before the offenses in Douglas County were committed. So it is not like he grabbed the gun and ran to Douglas County. There is just simply nothing there in the grand jury transcript or the interview with Mr. Guzman to suggest that he formed this intent. And I suggest to the court that in Mr. Guzman's interview, had he said anything remotely close to, I formed this gun and I decided to use it in robbing people in Douglas County, you can be sure that it would have been found, quoted, in the answering brief filed by Ms. Cade, and it probably would have been capitalized.
Mr. Petty, if I could interrupt you, sir, this is Justice Herndon in Las Vegas. I don't dispute what you're talking about in terms of direct evidence in the transcripts, but you're really talking about inferences that can be drawn from the facts. For instance, in Walker, when this court decided that and ruled that a jury could have found that the homicide occurred in Washoe County, that was despite the gentleman's confession in that case, making it more likely that the homicide occurred in Churchill, Lander, or Pershing counties, I believe. So there was a reflection of what's the inferences that can possibly be drawn from this evidence such that then you could lie in multiple different counties. And so wasn't that kind of what Judge Steinheimer did here, was work through the facts to see what inferences could be drawn by a reasonable person as to what the obtaining of the weapon in Washoe County meant in terms of what Mr. Guzman did thereafter, not with the outer buildings of the residences, but actually burglarizing the residences themselves?
Thank you, Justice Herndon. Let me see if I can answer the Walker case first and then the application by Judge Steinheimer. The Walker case is a sort of a one-off kind of case. It was a case of uncertainty. The Supreme Court, this court, went out of its way to point out that nobody could determine where the death had occurred in that particular case. It could have occurred in Churchill County, Lyon County, Pershing County, Washoe County. The body was found in Washoe County. Items of his property were pawned in Washoe County. And so the jury concluded that under 171.030, and I think it was probably under, although it mentions effects, it was probably under the continuing offense part of the statute, that venue was in Washoe County. It also pointed out, I think, Walker, the court was very cautious because it was afraid that if it remanded for a new trial, the very same arguments that were being advanced as to why venue didn't lie in Washoe County could possibly potentially be made regarding Pershing County, Churchill County, and Lyon County. And I note that in that particular case, they went out of their way to say, well, you know, venue is this sort of very pliable sort of thing that pushes over, I'm not using the correct language, where it pushes over, gives way when it's necessary to do so. That language is dicta, but it was supportive of what they wanted to do, which was to sustain the conviction. But I think this court in Guzman, having now made clear that venue turns on necessary connections, that Walker isn't quite as persuasive or controlling as it might have been. And in fact, I think this court should use this case to sort of distance itself from the reasoning in Walker. Now, turning to Judge Steinheimer's reasoning, what Judge Steinheimer did, and it's understandable, is she embraced the argument that was being offered by Ms. Cade and the state, which is, well, look, he was basically stealing out from garages and outhouses to support this drug habit, but now that he got this gun, he really got serious about what he was going to do and now had the nerve to go into houses and you know, potentially kill people in the act of stealing. That is respectfully a very fanciful narrative based upon their desire to make sure that venue stays in the Second Judicial District Court. But I don't think the actual facts presented to the grand jury, which are the two instances that I referenced, and the one reference to his interrogation, support that. That is a theory that the state is offering, but as this court in McNamara observed, venue and territorial jurisdiction go to the very power of the court to hear the case, not the culpability of the defendant. And what the state's offering and what Judge Steinheimer, I think, wrongfully embraced was this notion that I could look to theories of culpability to establish venue. And she manifestly abused her discretion when she did that. That's a second instance of manifest abuse of discretion. And I see that I'm out of time and didn't get to speak to NRS 171-060, but I'll rely on my brief.
I have a question if the chief will allow me to ask it.
Yes,
on that.
Yes, of course. Go ahead, Judge Silver.
I did have a question on that particular statute, and I would ask both of them. So I just wanted to make sure that I understood the record on the 171.060. My question was, when it comes to the evidence that was adduced at the grand jury, my question was, were any of the property items taken from the Douglas County killings, where were they found? My recollection of the record is that they were ultimately, everything from Douglas County was found in Carson City. So I guess my question is, if all of the property was found in Carson City, how does Washoe County Grand Jury, even under that statute, have any venue?
Thank you, Justice Silver. The answer to that is the vast majority of the property was found in Carson City. The theory behind this venue statute is that the state alleges that at some point when Mr. Guzman came back into Washoe County after the offenses had occurred in Douglas County, there was some property that had been taken from the Coons residence that was in the car, some jewelry and some other small items.
Was that actually in the record, though? I mean, is it in the record that yes, he said he traveled back and forth into the counties?
There's evidence that after the Douglas County offenses, he was back in Washoe County because on the few days after the Douglas County, then the event in Washoe County occurs. And the theory is that some property from the Coons residence was in his car at that time. Our argument is that in light of the fact that this court in Guzman said that for venue to exist, there has to be necessary connections, is the mere presence of little small items of property in a car in Washoe County that were not sold, traded, bartered, given away. Nothing happens to them. They're just there. Is that a sufficient connection to give rise to venue such that the Second Judicial District Court would entertain a burglary offense that occurred in Douglas County where there is a court, particularly the Ninth Judicial District Court, that has venue and jurisdiction and an interest in trying those cases there? So to answer your question, Justice Silver, there is evidence that small items were in Washoe County, but there's not much to make of that because nothing was done. And that's our point there.
Justice Stiglitz has a question for you.
Just to follow up on that colloquy with Justice Silver, my understanding is there's no evidence, direct evidence, that any of those small items were found in Washoe County. That when he was arrested in Carson City, those items were found in his car. And so the request is that the inference being drawn that if they were in the car in Carson at the time of arrest, then they must have been there the whole time, that they must have been driven into Washoe County. So when you say they're small items and there's evidence they were found in Washoe County, that requires an inferential leap. Is that correct?
Well, exactly. Let me see if I can. In my brief, in the opening petition, we argue that there was no evidence that there was property in Washoe County taken from those residents in Douglas County. And we argued in the alternative that even if the court were to conclude that you could inferentially decide that there were small items of property in his car, it didn't matter for the reason that there has to be a necessary connection. There simply isn't one. So that was our position, and that's our position this afternoon.
Thank you.
All right. Ms. Clerk, add 3 minutes to Mr. Petty's time for rebuttal on this case, and add 6 minutes to Ms. Kate's time for her response.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good afternoon, Ms. Kate. You ready to proceed?
I am, Your Honor. Thank you. May it please the court and counsel, my name is Marilee Kate, and I represent the state of Nevada in this matter. I want to start with these questions about where that evidence of the gun was, because, well, that's not where I plan to start. I think it is a really important point. The grand jury, by Exhibit 172, was presented with a 29-minute video of Mr. Guzman's interview. The state has provided the transcript of that interview in its appendices, but all the facts that the state relies on in its answering brief were also cited by the district court in its order and to the actual time minute stamps of the exhibit that were presented. And so I don't think the contention is that the facts the state offers are not in the record at all or weren't presented to the grand jury. If the inference that can be drawn from those is, it sounds like the dispute of Mr. Petty, but I wanted to clear that up because the Exhibit 172 does contain the information about Guzman going back and forth between Washoe County and Douglas County when he was working for the landscaping company in 2018. It contains the information about how he identified each of these properties while he was working for the landscaping company. It contains information about that he saw Sophia Rinkin's property and that she had valuable machines in the garage that he could use to obtain money for drugs. He could sell and use it to obtain money for drugs. It contains information about Ms. Kuntz's, why he identified Ms. Kuntz. He thought that no one would notice if he stole from her. And then again, the Davids, he worked for the Davids property. He was familiar and then went there first. And so I did want to clear that up because the district court did rely extensively in its footnotes and provided the actual statements Guzman made.
So Ms. Kate, Justice Kadish in Carson City. So my question then is, if his statements were that he had already identified the Kuntz property and the Minkin, is that the other property, and the two properties in Douglas County had already decided that he was going to try to take property from them back in 2018, why does finding the gun at the David's home change anything or have significance with regard to these Douglas County offenses that he had planned to commit even before?
Thank you for the question. So that's the point is that it changed the course and changed. We know that his overall purpose was to obtain money for drugs. And so he's going to commit burglaries of initially outbuildings and garages to do that. And he went to.
How do we know that?
Because he said that in his interview. And so he went to the Davids on the 3rd with that and enacting out that intent. He took items, a cut saw or some machine that he could cut things with on the 3rd. He went back on the 4th to obtain more items. Then he obtained the gun. And instead of going, in a reasonable inference, just like Justice Herndon was talking about, instead of going back to Ms. Rinkin's property or Ms. Kuntz's property, Ms. Kuntz was first, going to their properties and going to the garages that he had previously identified, he chose a different course. And it was based on kind of obtaining that gun. I mean, I think that's pretty... that's a reasonable inference that he changed course because now he's either empowered by the gun, he wants to go pursue items that are more valuable, that are easier to carry away. He said that with respect to the Davids property, actually, that when he did leave some items behind because he just couldn't carry them, but he was focused on the jewelry, the guns, smaller items that he could that were of value that he could carry away. And so that... obtaining the gun changed his course, changed the manner that he chose to obtain that money.
So
for,
he
for
said, so I apologize for interrupting, but I just want to make sure I'm clear. He said in his interview that he specifically was focused on going to outbuildings or garages rather than the residents themselves when he was making his plan?
So he said it's pieces of his interview. So he said with respect to Ms. Kuntz's property, he said he wanted to steal things of value because he didn't think anyone would notice.
Right.
With respect to Ms. Rinkin, he stated that he intended to go, or he saw items of value in her garage specifically. He identified items, machinery in her garage. And so the inference then, when he's going to the Davids property and focusing initially on outbuildings, is that that's what he's doing. He's pursuing the areas where the people aren't going to be, where the people may not notice for a handful of days if these items are missing, but certainly would have value.
Okay.
And so,
I apologize for interrupting, but I just want to be sure I understand what your argument is. So the argument is that because of these statements that he made, that we can infer from them that he was planning to go to parts of their property where the people wouldn't be, and that after he got the gun at the Davids property, fortuitously apparently, that changed his plan, and that's why he went into the residences at the two Douglas County homes thereafter. Is that the argument?
Yes, and okay. I'd add to that too that, you know, then you see the connection kind of come back to Washoe County, where he's learned that he can essentially enter these homes through unlocked back doors under the guise of night, under the darkness of night, murder occupants, get away with property, and, you know, to fulfill his purpose. And then he come back to Washoe County and fulfills that purpose again at the Davids. He's not going back to their outbuildings now. He's going inside. He's murdering the residents. He's burglarizing for that valuable property.
Miss Kate? Yeah, this is
Justice. I have a question. Oh, go on.
I'm sorry. This is Justice Stiglitz. If we were to reject the finding of that inference, and say I don't think that's not a proper inference to be drawn for the messer, it's too attenuated, then does the venue argument fail? Isn't it fair to say that this is the linchpin that, in your estimation, brings these cases into Washoe County from Douglas?
For 171030, that act requisite of obtaining the gun does is really significant to the state's case, yes.
Okay, thank you.
But I would say...
And I have a question to follow up on that, because Pahrump is very close to Las Vegas, and we have a lot of people that go back and forth from Las Vegas to Pahrump and back. You're saying that the act of just having a gun in your car and going back and forth in your counties is enough to give venue to both counties, and for a grand jury in Clark County to hear any crime that occurs that may have, like in this case, if there's a murder in Pahrump, the fact that a gun went back and forth from, you know, Las Vegas to Pahrump, that it gives the Clark County grand jury venue. Because there's never been a case in the history of Nevada that has, and this happens all the time, we see from Pahrump to Las Vegas.
Thank you for the question. So I have two parts of my answer. First, I think practically speaking, the Las Vegas District Attorney's Office probably wouldn't pursue that. It may be, let it be Pahrump. You don't know. They're busy. But more importantly, though, I think this court has recognized on many occasions that, well, many, a handful of occasions, that venue is a matter that it doesn't, or excuse me, that a defendant doesn't have the right to be tried in a particular county, and that venue is pliant. It can be flexible. And so what the state's advocating is not the extreme circumstance where we're the state's going across the state and trying to indict somebody in a place that has wholly no connection to the crimes. What the state's advocating here is that we consider, and the court consider, really the true purpose of these criminal procedure statutes, which is to simplify procedure and to avoid unnecessary expense and delay. And what the district court did in this case and what the state's done in this case is combine these cases because they are related under that common purpose. Guzman's intent was to gain money for drugs, and he went to these homes with that intent and escalated his plan when he obtained the gun in Washoe County, but he also used what he learned in Douglas County when he came back to Washoe County. So they are connected.
But my question, though, is that may very well be true venue for whoever tries the case ultimately. Like here you're talking about a presentation to a grand jury, which is specifically impounded, for example, it says territorial jurisdiction. So it makes sense that if a crime's committed in Laughlin, North Las Vegas, Mesquite, Moapa, the territorial jurisdiction is the 8th Judicial District. Okay. But how, I mean, do you not see the difference where you have an indictment that charges specifically that the murder occurred in Douglas County with nothing else? That somehow the Washoe County grand jury should be presented with this as far as venue.
I understand what the court, I think the court's asking me, but I think in Guzman, that was the position that he took, was that it was specific to county lines, and this court found that, you know, that we would consider the venue statutes, which do allow for cross county lines to interpret the grand jury's territorial jurisdiction. So I don't think it can be just interpreted or relied on. And I think this court has said that it's not just by county lines, or the legislature would have said that. And so here, the state is relying on venue statutes. The acts requisite in this case to the commission of the Douglas County offenses, in the manner that Guzman chose to do it, was obtaining that gun. Sure, Guzman could have gone to Douglas County with a knife and fulfilled his intent, but he didn't. He chose to identify those properties, wait until he obtained the gun, and then went inside and burglarized their homes and murdered the occupants. And so it's the manner that Guzman chose to proceed in this case is why that gun is so significant, and also why his actions in Douglas County are significant to the state in its prosecution in Washoe County. You know, when
if they had grabbed a knife instead of used this gun, there'd be no venue.
It would be a different analysis. I mean,
so the gun is really what puts this into the Washoe County grand jury.
By the facts of this case.
So if you had a hypothetical where a gun was used on the Davids, but the two people that were killed in Douglas, you know, they just went into a kitchen and used a knife, you're saying that the Washoe County grand jury couldn't have heard the case?
No, that would be absolutely a different scenario.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Ms. Kate, this is Justice Herndon. I mean, you can't commit burglary while in possession of a firearm without having a firearm, and you can't commit a killing by shooting without having a firearm. And if requisite is defined as needed for a particular purpose, then the gun is needed for the purpose of committing those crimes, correct?
I agree. And one thing I do want to address, too, with respect to the venue arguments made and the limitations imposed that Guzman wants this court to impose on these venue statutes are based primarily, I think there's 7 or 8 jurisdictions that Mr. Petty cites, besides California. I'll address California separately, but Arkansas, Arizona, Montana. And in those cases, and this court can disregard them pretty easily because in those cases, their constitutions in those states recognize the right to trial within the county where the offense occurred. And so when those courts were interpreting similar statutes, they had to limit their interpretation of those statutes to comply with their constitution. But in State v. Stewart, this court interpreted a venue statute 171.040, and the same kind of position was advocated that these other jurisdictions, you know, should be relied upon. And this court actually said that it could disregard those because those states have the right to trial in a particular county, and Nevada does not. And I'm not advocating here, again, I'm not advocating that we should just ignore venue completely. But what I'm advocating is that we provide venue the interpretation that this court has previously given to other venue statutes, that this court did in Walker, that venue is not supposed to be a limited approach. It's supposed to be interpreted expansively and consistently with the purpose designated in Title 14. And so that's the position
the state's taking. What about Mr. Petty's argument, though, where they weren't really sure which county the crime occurred in Walker? I mean, here, clearly, these people were killed in their homes in Douglas County. Isn't that distinguishable?
So I think, as the state argued in its briefing, is that the district court actually asked this question early on in this case about this very issue of, well, how do we know his intent wasn't formed to actually kind of change course once he obtained the gun in Washoe County? Or maybe it was while he was driving back home. Because we don't know where that intent was formed, it's a similar scenario as Walker, just because the whole act wasn't done. We didn't know where it was done. But here, we could say that we don't know where one of those elements is done. So even under that more limited reading,
The venue is based on intent and not the act.
No, I don't agree. What I'm saying is, if we're going to adopt Mr. Petty's reading and talking about intent, I think that it's still this case would still survive and the petition should be denied.
Is there any evidence that Justice Katers, is there any evidence that he had the intent to commit the murder at any time before he was in their home and faced with an occupant?
Well, I mean, I think he knew that there's occupants there. I think it's all about reasonable inferences. And when we're talking about, you know, the standard of proof for a grand jury, which is preponderance of the evidence, and that it can be proven by circumstantial evidence, I think you can make reasonable inferences and accept the reasonable inferences of the district court that his decision to go into these homes in the middle of the night with elderly occupants would indicate that there would be an occupant inside. He said with the Davis property, he went in at 6 a.m. We know the other crimes occurred in the middle of the night. He went through an unlocked door. So I don't think based on the evidence, that is an unreasonable inference to make.
Ms. Kate, you'll agree the cases that the court cited in support of this intent kind of argument, Betts and Price, you know, in Betts, there was a clearer intent component. The defendant picks up the child in one county to take them to molest them. So you have that kind of linchpin. In Price, you have it where the defendant specifically is going to another county to get the gun to go effectuate a killing. So there the courts had more evidence in which to ground this intent theory. So, I mean, do you think those are distinguishable from what we have here? And then I have one more question for you, so go ahead.
Okay, I understand why the court's asking that question, but in those cases, the California Supreme Court also talked about acts requisite and didn't make the requirement of the statute to be based on forming intent before committing the act. But that's what those facts bore out to be. But I would say in People v. Thomas, which is a case a 2012 case from California that was cited by Mr. Petty and Mr. Guzman, is that there are a series of discussions of other cases in there, one being People v. Posey. And there, a detective in Marin County called a defendant in San Francisco County, made a deal to sell drugs. Drugs were sold in San Francisco County. So defendant did not leave San Francisco. Marin County, venue was found in Marin County because the act requisite was determined to be that phone call where the deal was made, even though they were located in different places. And another similar case cited in Thomas, discussed in Thomas, was a stealing of a cab. So a defendant got into a cab in Sacramento County, went, had the cab driver take him to Yolo County, committed a robbery in Yolo County, and stole the cab, drove back to Sacramento County. Sacramento County was found to be an appropriate venue over those facts. But and what I think is going on, you know, what's happening is with these cases is I think we can always find a factual distinction, and venue is highly factual. And here, you know, the state submits that the grand jury evidence taken together, just the transcript as well as the, I think, 179 exhibits were presented to the grand jury, including Exhibit 172, which was Mr. Guzman's interview, that those all together, that you can make these reasonable inferences that the state has offered, that the district court found in its order, to find that venue is appropriate here and interpret these statutes consistent with this court's prior decisions that venue is not something, or county, a defendant doesn't have the right to be tried in a particular county, that, you know, that this would really truly be consistent with the purpose of Title 14, not to separate these offenses when there's cross-admissibility of the evidence. And so that would be, that is an important piece, I think, that the court should consider is its prior case law. Also that the, within the statute, you know, with respect to 171.060, Guzman reads in a limitation about the proper needs to be more, or it needs to be more than a de minimis activity. Or with 171.030, there's a time limitation. But those limitations just do not appear on the face of the statute. And so those can be argued in other circumstances, but they don't appear in the statutory text itself.
Ms. Kate, if all other facts were the same, but the Davids had not been murdered, so to take that one out, would we be trying a Douglas County murder in Washoe County? Every other fact the same, would we be trying these Douglas County offenses in Washoe County?
I mean, don't
same
know.
Same venue
the
argument would apply, right?
Same venue would apply. Certainly, I think this, under the statute, we could. I think is the point, but would we is a different question. Practically speaking, is a different question. But I think under the expansive approach, we could that this court has adopted a venue and previously.
No. Okay.
And I see that I'm running out of time, so I just would just like to conclude by saying that, you know, the district court's decision in this case doesn't represent a manifest abuse. It's the district court, with respect to Mr. Petty's argument, I do want to say, with respect to 173.115, and may I just finish, Your Honor?
Yes, of course, please.
Thank you. With respect to 173.115 and 171.020, the district court did consider those statutes, and whether this court finds them to be venue or not, I don't think is dispositive of this case, because the district court did independently consider this case under the two statutes that Mr. Impetti and I have focused on, 171.030 and 171.060. And so the district court didn't manifestly abuse its discretion in this case. If there was some error, we're talking about an error correction, which this court does not typically do on writ petitions, but this isn't a manifest abuse. The district court's opinion is consistent with this court's prior holdings, with the statutes, and with the legislative intent. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kate. Are there any further questions for Ms. Kate from the justices? All right, seeing none, thank you. Mr. Petty.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm going to be quick. The inference that that the state wants to make from the gun, and the gun really is the linchpin, as was noted. If you look at the Real Parties Appendix at pages 206 through 208, 217, and 223, which are the page sites in the answering brief that sort of lay the foundation for the rest of the argument about how after he obtained the gun, suddenly changed, his behavior changed, you'll see that those statements are rather benign and that the construct that the state offers is of their own making. With regards to, the gun also, in the Price case, the court noted that for venue purposes, they could also look to preparatory acts to determine whether or not venue would lie. And in Price, they found that going into one county for the purpose of obtaining weapons, which were intended to be used and were used in another county, to be a jurisdictionally significant preparatory act. You don't have anything like that here. You have a situation where Mr. Guzman goes into Washoe County on the 3rd, comes back in on January the 4th, and randomly just takes property and goes home. There's nothing in the record to indicate that he took that property with the intent to prepare for this, what later became homicides in Douglas County. So that preparatory language is gone. The state wants to argue...
Well, Mr. Petty, if I may, this is Justice Herndon. I mean, all that you're looking at in terms of the intent and acts is whether they were in preparation for armed burglaries, because the state's charged felony murder. It doesn't have to be that he formed the intent to go kill somebody when he first obtained a gun, just to use it to burglarize the actual residences.
Justice Herndon, culpability is not a venue question. That's a question to be tried at trial. So I would ask that you... discount that particular analysis. The question is, and the state's theory is that once he obtained this gun in Washoe County, that everything changed such that Washoe County has jurisdiction and venue over offenses occurring solely in Douglas County. There is no question, no argument that these offenses occurred in Douglas County. There is no evidence that the intent was formed in Washoe County. The intent could have been formed, as Byford v. State tells us, instantaneously at the time of the shooting. And finally, if I may commit to finish this one thought, Chief Justice?
Yes, go ahead, sir.
I agree. Real quick, Ms. Cade argues that nobody has a right to be tried in any particular county. The general rule is that venue exists in the county that's charged in the indictment with the information. And generally speaking, that is the same county where the criminal act occurred. So in Washoe County, it would be the second judicial. In Douglas County, it would be the ninth judicial. Thank you so much.
All right, counsel. Are there any other questions from justices for Mr. Petty? All right, hearing none, we'll thank counsel for their arguments, excellent arguments today and the briefings in this case. The case will stand submitted and the court will be in recess until...